Tonight was blood and guts. The violent spectacle that it always is, tonight was no different. Of course, they can get away with certain things that WWE can't or chooses not to when they have their War Games matches. But if you are a fan of the old school War Games matches and the horsemen and people bleeding, you always get that. You could always rely on that here when it comes to these AEW matches. When it was all said and done, Team AEW picked up the win over the Elite. Probably should have seen that coming because the Elite got the win in Anarchy in the Arena back at Double or Nothing, so it would have made AEW look very weak if they would have gone down 2-0 up against the Elite. But when this match was over, the storytelling is what stood out to me here. The storytelling in Blood and Guts this year was actually very good. One thing that this match did tonight, it gave us Jack Perry defending the TNT title at Wembley Stadium against Darby Allin, which is what the Elite agreed to. At the end of the match, when Jack Perry was about to quite literally go down in flames again to Darby Allin, he was threatening to set this man on fire if he did not get the TNT title match that he wanted at All In. And it was Matt Jackson who said, "You want the TNT title match? You got the TNT title match. This has gone too far. It has to stop here." And Darby said, "All you got to do is say, I quit." And just like that, Matt Jackson says, "I quit." And Team AEW walks away with the win. But we were this close from getting Jack Perry set on fire again for the second time in 2 months. You know, all the fans out there, all the CM Punk fans, who were very upset when he got terminated from AEW, they were looking forward to that. They were begging for it. They would have loved to have seen this man go up in flames here tonight on this show. Or, you know, if you think back to what happened when Punk got terminated, I'm sure many of them were burning Jack Perry in effigy. But they would have loved to have seen the real thing here tonight. But they surrendered. And like I said, they agreed to give Darby his championship match. It was very similar, the ending, to, if you remember, the TNT title match between Adam Copeland and Christian Cage. And Christian was in the corner, and Copeland was threatening him with a board with nails in it. He was going to hit him in the balls. And Christian was basically like, "Okay, that's it. I quit. I quit." And Copeland was able to win the TNT title because he just did not want to take the punishment. Now, in this case, Jack Perry, you know, and to their credit, they are trying their hardest to get Jack Perry over as a tough guy. And it's going to be very difficult, I think, for people to ever really see Jack Perry as being a tough guy. But he picked up the win for the Elite at Anarchy in the Arena. Here, he was ready to take it on the chin. He was ready to go up in flames. He was, if that meant not surrendering to Team AEW and not surrendering to Darby Allin, then that is the punishment that he was willing to take. But in the end, he didn't have to. It was Matt Jackson who saved him. I will say, though, Perry was cuffed to the cage, and he took a hard chair shot to the head, unprotected chair shot to the head, because, of course, he was cuffed, so he couldn't, you know, put his hand up, and took an unprotected chair shot to the head from Mark Briscoe. And I thought that was very stupid. That was very dumb. But the other story they told here, I mentioned storytelling. The two men who have been kept apart for many months now are the two men who hate each other's guts. And that is Swerve Strickland and Hangman Adam Page. And in fact, the only reason Hangman even agreed to be in this match in the first place was to get his hands on Swerve. He doesn't give a shit about the Elite. He doesn't care whether Team Elite wins or not. He had tunnel vision. He was out there trying to maim this man. He nearly lost his job because Matt Jackson was ready to fire him if he did not get in the cage and stop kicking Swerve's ass on the outside of the cage. So he is as obsessed as he has ever been with getting revenge on this man and trying to take that title away from him. And in fact, that's how the role in tonight's match between the two of them ended. They ended up, you know, fighting off, and we never saw them again. But that story is still playing out. It's been playing out since last year. But clearly, Hangman is not through with this man yet. And we are going to see where that goes, because if Bryan Danielson does not win the AEW World title at All In, then the match at All Out in Chicago should absolutely be Swerve Strickland defending the AEW World title against Hangman Adam Page. I do wonder, though, if they might want to or might be planning to save the match for Full Gear. Full Gear is going to be the one-year anniversary of the sickest match I've ever seen in all my years of watching wrestling, which was the Texas Death Match, the most violent match I've ever seen last year between Hangman and Swerve. That was in November at Full Gear. Might they want to hold off until Full Gear, the one-year anniversary this year, and have these two match up again, only this time for the AEW World title? I think that there's a very good possibility of that, but of course, November is still a ways off. So I'm selfishly hoping we get it in September and not in November. But through all of the violence and all of the gore and all the weapons and all the blood and everything else, there was some great storytelling here. You know, last year, I said that the Blood and Guts match, it was not the best Blood and Guts match they had ever done. But it was violent, it was chaotic. That's exactly how I would describe Blood and Guts this year. It was not the best Blood and Guts match they've ever done, but it was violent, it was chaotic, the crowd was hot for it, and it set up two championship matches now for us in the future. One at Wembley Stadium, and then one TBD between Swerve and Hangman, which we know we're going to get. The Acclaimed, we already know the Acclaimed are going to get a shot at the tag team titles because they already won the opportunity. And it will probably happen at Wembley Stadium because who else are the Young Bucks going to face? I guess FTR is back now. They could be added to the mix. We had FTR and the Bucks last year. So we already know the Acclaimed are going to be getting a shot. I have no idea who Okada is going to be defending the Continental title against. Based on their interactions tonight, it could very well be Mark Briscoe, who's already the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion. In fact, he's defending that title this Friday against Roderick Strong. It's a damn shame that Kenny Omega is not going to be ready in time for All In, because that would be the obvious match. But we're going to have to wait a little bit longer to get that. But I thought Blood and Guts, for what it was, I thought it delivered. And I do think that it moved things forward heading into Wembley and beyond in a positive way. MJF and Will Ospreay, that was the other question. Based on the finish of their match last week, one of the best matches in Dynamite history, a very polarizing match among part of the IWC here, the Internet Wrestling Community, polarizing only among people who, you know, have complaints about pretty much everything. But it was a very divisive match, and I already talked about that. But the question was, coming out of that match, it seemed obvious that there was a ready-made rematch there for Wembley Stadium, but would they take it? Or would they try to overcomplicate things and bring other people into it and bring Daniel Garcia back and have him involved here? No. In fact, they're going the predictable but the right route, which is we're getting a rematch at Wembley Stadium for the international title, which is technically not the international title. We'll talk about that. And Mercedes Moné has got herself some muscle. You know, Mercedes is a very good wrestler. One thing that you cannot say about Mercedes is that she's got a lot of muscles, right? She's not big in that way where she's got big muscles. You don't look at her and go, wow, what a powerhouse she is. So those who don't have muscles do the smart thing and they go out and spend money and they pay for muscles. I mean, Hulk Hogan made a career out of that. You know, Dr. Zahorian and all that. But you go out and you get yourself some muscle. And that's what Mercedes did. And who that person is, you should know exactly who that person is, because it's the very idea that I pitched 2.5 months ago. I love it. Talk about all of it. This is your AEW Dynamite review, Blood and Guts, for Wednesday, July 24th, 2024. I am the Sala Monster. Had a great discussion last night over on JD's channel on Tuesday Night Titans, over 3 hours. So if you didn't check it out, if you missed it, make sure you do check it out tomorrow. Not tonight, because I got you right now, but Great episode of TNT. So go ahead and check that out. And I also just want to give a shout out to JD because he lost his fur baby this morning of 22 years, Bacardi. And having gone through that myself 5 years ago, it sucks. I mean, there's just no other way around it. It's just a shitty situation. So I'm thinking about you, brother, and I will be seeing you on Friday at House of Glory. You know damn well, by the way, that I was watching this main event tonight, holding my breath, as I watched Swerve Strickland out there and staple guns and chairs and all kinds of plunder and weapons and blood and guts and everything, because we've got Swerve Strickland, the AEW World Champion, coming in for our main event this Friday night at House of Glory. And I said, I see the announcement of him being in Blood and Guts and leading Team AEW 48 hours before. I'm sitting here like he's my son and I'm his father. And I'm like, please, please let him get through the match unscathed. Thankfully, I think he did. I think he's okay. So let's get into this here. This show opened with Alex Marvez, our favorite correspondent. He was in the AEW hotel parking garage, so he was not at the arena. But he said he was hoping to get a word with Will Ospreay. And all of a sudden, Will Ospreay, he went running past him. I think he had his luggage with him. Like, he was in a rush to get to the bill. I don't know, maybe he overslept his alarm. I don't know why he was running late. But he goes to his car, and he finds that his tire has been slashed. And so he's unable to use his car. So Ospreay asked Marvez, he goes, you have a car here? Marvez says, yeah. He goes, give me the keys. So he gives him the keys. They race over to this white SUV that just happens to be parked right there. And apparently that's Alex Marvez's rental car. Marvez gets in the passenger seat. Ospreay gets in the driver's seat. And Marvez still has the microphone, so we can still hear him. And he asks Ospreay, he goes, have you driven in America before? And Ospreay says, nope. And he hits the gas, and off he goes. And the only way I can describe it is Alex Marvez, he let out what I would describe as a primal scream. Ah! That's it. As soon as Ospreay hit the gas, that's exactly what we heard. That's right. I don't know where that came from. It came from deep within. It sounds like something out of a Family Guy cartoon. Oh, Alex Marvez. Meanwhile, back in the arena, we get a group of cheerleaders, and they're lined up the ramp to welcome out the new AEW International Champion, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF. He said Will Ospreay did not hit the Tiger Driver 91 in their match last week because he is a gutless coward. The fact that the fans even thought that Ospreay could beat him when he couldn't even beat that schmuck Swerve is laughable. And then MJF turned to the camera and said that Shane, talking to Swerve now, says, I haven't forgotten about you. I have not forgotten about my world championship. He said he's just waiting for the right moment to pounce. So is that why he didn't declare himself for the Owen Hart tournament? He's waiting for the right moment to pounce. Okay. He said, lucky for Will, his grandma died recently, which is true. Will Ospreay's grandmother did pass away recently. He said, so he can dig himself a grave next to hers, but he told him to dig that grave about a football field away from her tombstone. And he said, Lord knows that fat skank needs all the room she can get. So he challenged Ospreay to come on out after him. He said, but he's worthless. Of course, he wasn't there yet, so nobody came out. He said, speaking of worthless, and he turned his attention to the international title. He said the fans like the belt because it's the workhorse belt, right? A lot of great workers have held that belt, and it was held by international talent. But he says he deserves a title worthy of his superior intellect, bank account, and upbringing. This title, much like Daniel Garcia and Will Ospreay, is nothing more than garbage. And he leaned through the ropes, and he dropped the international title into a garbage can that was sitting on the floor outside the ring. He pulled a Medusa. In the ring, though, behind him on a stand was clearly a belt, and it was covered by, like, a black tarp, so we couldn't see it. But he pulled off the black tarp to reveal the brand new American Championship. And there she is. Old Glory. Not for nothing. That's a nice looking belt. That is a nice looking belt. It's the same design as the international title. But I'm a sucker for a belt that has a little bit of blue in it. So I like it. Although another belt is the last thing that this company needs. But it's only temporary. But I'll tell you what though. You know what I like? I like the callback with this to what Ospreay did in New Japan. If you remember when Will Ospreay won the U.S. title, the IWGP U.S. title, he changed the look of the belt and the name of the belt to the IWGP UK title. So really all MJF is doing is he's taking a page out of the Ospreay playbook there. So it's kind of smart. So the fans chanted USA and he cut them off and said when he talks about America, he's not talking about Nasty Ass Nashville. Say that five times fast. Because they were in Nashville, Tennessee tonight. He's talking about the only place that matters, the most magical place in the world, known as Liv Morgan's Booty Shot. Known as Plainview, Long Island, New York. You want to get heat in Nashville, you just put over Long Island, New York, and just instant heat. He said, God bless the USA, God bless our American champion, but most importantly, God bless our American hero, Maxwell Jacob Friedman. They played the Stars and Stripes theme, right, which Lex Luger used for a while when they turned him red, white, and blue in WWE, so he came out to that music. They played that music, they shot red, white, and blue streamers into the air, and then they dropped the American flag from the ceiling. And the stars on the flag were replaced by little MJF heads. Because they zoomed in and it was his head. And so that was what was on the flag instead of the usual stars. Will Ospreay finally made it to the arena. There he was. And he went after MJF, but he got away. Ospreay got on the mic. He said he could try his best to feed everyone some bullshit, but they're not eating it. At minute 59 in their match, and he says MJF was breathing out of his asshole, which is very impressive. And he said MJF knew that he couldn't beat him. He reached into his trunks. He went past his tiny little dick. And he pulled out his diamond ring and cracked him over the skull with it. He would rather cheat than admit that a guy like him is on his level. But he got great news to share here because he had a meeting with Tony Khan and with Christopher Daniels. Let me stop there for a second. Does that not seem a little redundant to me? Or to you? I mean, it's redundant to me. Does that not seem redundant that he would have to go meet with Tony Khan and Christopher Daniels? Christopher Daniels, the whole point of him, he is Tony Khan's surrogate. So Tony Khan doesn't always have to come out and make these announcements and decisions, right? That's Christopher Daniels can do that on his behalf. But I mean, if you're going to go meet with Tony Khan, what the hell do you need Christopher Daniels there for? I'm just saying. But anyway, he met with the two of them, and the news is this. He's got his rematch. Not only does Will Ospreay got his rematch, he has it on his home soil. All in, London, August 25th, it will be MJF defending the International Championship against Will Ospreay. Well, I mean, look, that's for the International Championship. He didn't say anything about the American Championship, right? Two totally different things here. Ospreay went, he pulled the international title out of the garbage can outside, and he brought it to the back with him. This was a good open. MJF went way over the top with the America love, right? Between the belt and the streamers and the flag with his face on it. All of a sudden, he's the most patriotic man in the world. But I'll tell you what, that title is going to get him great heat next week at Arena Mexico. Because he's going to Mexico for CMLL. He's going to be wrestling Templario next Friday. So imagine him pulling up to Arena Mexico with that American title and heeling on the fans. He's going to get a lot of heat doing that. Ospreay was pissed when he came out, rightfully so. So, you know, everything they did with him I thought was bang on. And the rematch is confirmed. So we no longer have to wonder, what are they going to do with Ospreay? You know, are they going to add somebody to the mix, which I suppose they still could, but they shouldn't. Right now, it's one-on-one. We're getting the rematch at Wembley Stadium. It will be MJF and Will Ospreay, and that's the way it should have been from day one. So I like that. That was the right decision to make. To the back, we find out who would have the man advantage in the Blood and Guts match. We see Bryce Remsburg is standing right outside one of the locker rooms, and he's got a coin. So he opens the door, and what we find is Christopher Daniels is laid out on the ground, and standing over him are the members of Team Elite, everybody except Hangman. Hangman Page was not there, but all the other members of the Elite were standing over him. And they said, he was just taking a nap, they said. So Matt Jackson said, look, we brought our own coin, if you don't mind. It's got AEW on one side, it's got Elite on the other. They flip the coin, and of course, it lands on the Elite. And Bryce walks off. But then we see that the coin had the Elite on both sides. So it was a phony coin. What do you know? So the heels have the advantage. And honestly, the heels really should have the advantage in a match like that. Now we just got a couple of learning trees here. Quite appropriate, because now it's time for the learning tree. Chris Jericho. Out to defend the FTW championship against Murder Grandpa himself, Minoru Suzuki. Always good to hear some Kazaninare here on this show. And honestly, sadly, I will tell you, that was the best part of this entire thing. Just being able to hear that music and see him coming out and doing his whole entrance. After that, it was 95% chops. So if you love chops in your match, maybe you like pork chops for dinner, you know, some people like chops, some people like mutton chops. If you like chops, this is the match for you. Now, I like Suzuki, and I know he does a lot of chopping in his match. I mean, the guy's in his mid-50s, so there's things that he used to be able to do that he can't do anymore. It's easy to rely on just chopping people. And sometimes, you know, depending on who he's in the ring with, I remember he had that match with Bryan Danielson. That was great. And there was a lot of chopping there, too. But just this here, I'm watching these two just go back and forth for the majority of the match. And this is what they're doing. And it usually doesn't bother me this much. But like this time I'm watching it and I'm just like, okay, this is ridiculous. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? He chopped Jericho so hard. And so many times that Jericho started bleeding from the chest. And I don't mean like you see the blood under the skin, like the broken blood vessels or like a little bit of blood. Like, no, the blood is dripping down his chest. He's being chopped so hard. I mean, it really did. It literally looked like Suzuki was trying to chop down the learning tree in this match. So it was all chops. They go through a commercial break. When things come back, Jericho again, bleeding from the chest. He tried for his springboard clothesline, but he fell into a Suzuki armbar in the ropes. Suzuki smacked Jericho repeatedly with chairs, trapped one of his hands in one, and then smashed the chair with another chair. Back inside, the chops turned to forearms. Suzuki did the misdirect into the rear naked choke. Jericho, though, swept the legs, and he got the walls of Jericho. Suzuki escaped. So they repeated the sequence again. This time, though, Suzuki tried to go for the gotch. Trying for the gotch-style pile driver. Jericho, though, hit a low blow and then a Judas effect for the win. After the match, Jericho is posing with the FTW title. Suzuki gets to his feet, and he is not happy. He has murder in his eyes, and he sneaks up from behind Jericho, locks him in the choke, and then he hits the gotch pile driver. Here comes Big Bill and Brian Keith because the two of them were banned from ringside for the match. Well, now the match is over. So they hit the ring and they attack Suzuki until Katsuyori Shibata's music hits. Because there's no hook, we were told, and there's no Joe, because Samoa Joe is in the middle of filming season 2 of Twisted Metal. Apparently they just started filming on the 17th, and the filming is going through October. Does not mean he is going to be gone until October, but they are filming for the next few months, so that is where he is. So Shibata's all by himself. He comes out there and he sneaks up from behind. He low-bridged Bill out of the ring. And then he took out Brian Keith. Again, if you like chop fests, then you probably like this match. And if you don't, then you didn't. This did nothing for me. But I do love hearing Kaza ni Nare. So again, it wasn't a total loss. We go to the back where Renee is there to interview the new CMLL Women's Champion, Willow Nightingale, who is there with her new belt. Another title on this show. I know that's exactly what we need, is another championship on this show. at least for the next few weeks. So she was about to speak, Willow was, when Stokely Hathaway interrupted and distracted her just long enough for Chris Statlander to ambush her. Statlander hit an F5 onto one of the equipment cases. Stokely challenged Willow to an eliminator match next week on Dynamite for the CMLL women's title and said that we'll wait for your answer until you wake up. And then they walked off. Who asks for an eliminator match instead of just asking for a championship match? What? Like, if I beat somebody up in the back, right? And they have a title that I want. I'm not asking them for an eliminator match. I'm like, I want a championship match. We got a big stadium show coming up. Give me a title shot. We don't have rankings in this company anymore. Don't give me that rankings bullshit, okay? The rankings are dead. They died a long time ago. Then they tried to bring them back. I don't know why. I haven't heard a fucking word about them. There are no rankings anymore. What are they asking for an eliminator match for? Ask for a damn title match. I'll tell you what, though. Statlander and Willow at Wembley Stadium is going to be great. And that gives us three strong women's matches on that show because we'll have Willow and Chris Statlander. We'll have Mercedes and Britt Baker and Toni Storm and Mariah May all on the same show. That's pretty good. We had another promo backstage with Renee. This one was recorded earlier in the day. And this time she was interviewing Bryan Danielson, who was sitting cross-legged on top of one of the equipment cases. He said the doctor said that for the moment, his neck is fixable. If something happens and he just wants to enjoy the moment, that's kind of where his head is at right now, right? He knows his neck is fixable, but he just wants to kind of enjoy things while he still can because his full-time career is winding down, as we all know. So Jeff Jarrett interrupts him. Just comes walking by. And Jarrett says that he was crushed when he didn't win the Owen Hart Cup, but Danielson is the perfect guy to win it and to fulfill his destiny at Wembley Stadium. Jarrett said that Swerve Strickland knows exactly what he needs to do to retain his title. He said it sounded like Danielson had one foot out the door, or he was just making excuses, talking about his neck. He said, if you're going all in, you got to go all in. A lot of people believe in him, Jarrett being at the very top of that list. So Jarrett left and after his little pep talk here, and Renee asked Bryan, you know, how do you feel about that? And Danielson said he's got a lot of work to do. Excalibur said the full interview is coming soon to the AEW YouTube channel. I thought that was a good use of Jarrett, especially, you know, they did a good job of establishing how much the Owen was important to him. And how badly he wanted to win it, and how honored he was and touched that he was even in the tournament in the first place. They had him presenting the title and the trophy to Danielson in the ring after he won it. So for him to show up and say, hey, brother, look, you know, you're having some doubts here. You know, this tournament was a really important thing to me. I didn't win it, but you did. And so don't squander this opportunity. If you're getting a title shot in the main event at Wembley Stadium, you better go and work for it and take advantage of it. So it was like a little pep speech that he gave him here. I also think it may have also been a way to play off the comments that Danielson's has been making in the media recently. Because he, yeah, even before the Owen, was giving a couple of interviews and was saying, you know, that I'm not at a point in my career where, you know, I should be challenging for the AEW world title. I don't think my body could hold up to a big pay-per-view main event. I just don't see myself in that role. So those comments, you know, looking back on it, may have been intentional and, you know, it may be playing off of that. No, I don't know if it's a self-confidence issue, but maybe it is. You know, maybe he feels like he doesn't have it at that level anymore and he's content to just sort of, you know, finish his full-time career out, however it works out. And he just needs that extra little bit of motivation going into the main event at All In. But I thought this was good, you know, having Jarrett talks some sense into him. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight and joining me here for the Dynamite review, Blood and Guts edition. I welcome all of you, and I'm live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday here on this channel, plus pay-per-views, so if you missed the Raw recap from Monday, you could go back and check that out. I'm going to be typically live on Friday nights after SmackDown. Oh my god. And you might hear that a time or two. I will not, however, be live on Friday. I will be elsewhere. But typically I am live on Friday. Thank you. Who dropped that Brie mode? Is that M. Mills? M. Mills, thank you for the Brie mode. We're not talking about Brie. We're talking about Britt. Britt Baker. Britt Baker had not wrestled a match at all since a September 2023 match on Collision. That is how long this woman has been out of the ring for. Until tonight. Tonight, she was back in the ring one-on-one with an old rival of hers. She was in the ring with Hikaru Shida. 10 months away from the ring, and I thought Britt looked good out there tonight. A lot of history between these two women. Shida famously broke Britt's nose in a match on Dynamite 4 years ago, for those who may have forgotten. This image here, which if I remember correctly, is that the image that Britt put on a t-shirt? Or was that from the match with Thunder Rosa? I don't remember. But that's what this image is from. This right here is what happens when you fuck with Hikaru Shida. But here in this match, Britt put the glove on. She took too long, though, to follow up in trying for lockjaw. Shida hit a German suplex into a guillotine. Shida released and missed a dive. Both women traded near falls. Shida tried the Falcon Arrow. Britt spun out of it. She wanted lockjaw. Shida, though, got the ropes. So Shida was conflicted about whether or not to grab her kendo stick, which was laying in the corner. But that delay allowed Britt Baker to hit a rolling neck breaker. Shida hit the question mark kick into the Falcon Arrow. Baker dodged the katana knee and applied lockjaw for the submission win. Good comeback win for Britt. Again, first match in 10 months. I thought she looked good. Of course, she was going to win here because she's heading into Wembley Stadium. And as far as we know, Shida is not. After the match was over, Mercedes Moné's music interrupts. And she saunters out onto the stage. She's got her New Japan Strong Women's title around her waist. She's got her TBS title over her shoulder. And she says she knows Britt Baker wants a TBS title match at Wembley Stadium. And everybody wants to know what her answer is going to be to the challenge. And her answer is no. There will be no title match. All of a sudden, they have a tight shot of Britt Baker in the ring. She's up against the ropes looking out at Mercedes. And all of a sudden, there is a commotion in the arena. And before they even showed who it was, in my mind, I'm like, it's got to be her. And sure enough, camera pans out, and who do we see in the ring behind Britt Baker? Camille. Former NWA Women's World Champion, Camille. Camille Brickhouse. The same Camille who has been rumored to be under contract to AEW as far back as February. She had an NXT deal in hand, and she turned it down and supposedly signed many months ago with AEW. There she is, standing in the middle of the ring, and she gets Britt Baker up on her shoulders in a torture rack position, spins her out into a sit-out slam, and Mercedes climbs into the ring, and Camille raises her hand. So, Mercedes Moné has herself a heater. How about that? How about that? Yes, this is the idea that I pitched. I pitched it over 2 months ago, even before she had the match, her first match in an AEW ring against Willow Nightingale at Double or Nothing. At the time, I pitched it as Camille debuts as her bodyguard, as her muscle, and helps her win the TBS title. Instead, she won the title on her own, and they waited 2 months. But in the end, we got the same result. And I love the idea, which is why I floated it in the first place, because it just fits so well. Mercedes is going around. She's talking about how She's the CEO, right? I'm the CEO. What does that mean? Well, every CEO has to have employees, right? Why not make Camille her first employee? She doesn't even have to speak. It's the same role that she debuted in when she debuted in the NWA. She was brought in as the insurance policy for Nick Aldis. And she got over. She didn't say a word. For months and months, maybe over a year, this woman, I didn't even know what her voice sounded like. I always thought, like, you remember The Undertaker when he was in the movie Suburban Commando? And we didn't hear him speak the entire film until we got to that one part and he opened his mouth and it sounded like he had just, blown up 15 fucking balloons. It sounded like me there singing the Joe Hendry song at the beginning of the stream, right? I didn't know, if you watch the movie, you have no idea what the guy sounds like. But that was the role that she debuted in the NWA, and it was very effective. And she was able to get over that way. And so here, her being the muscle for Mercedes, who's completely full of herself, and she can have somebody bigger and stronger than her fight her battles for her that she doesn't want to fight, is the smart way to go, and it puts more heat on her. The other thing also is, Mercedes, we know, is going to be a prominent part of AEW television. She is one of the big stars. Tony Khan, I'm sure, is paying her very well. She's going to get a good amount of TV time. Wherever she goes now, Camille goes, and it gets Camille on TV. So it is by no means a bad spot for her to be in. Instead of just debuting her, and then she makes a couple of appearances, and then she gets relegated to Rampage, or we barely see her on TV, that would be a very ineffective use of Camille. So that's why I pitched the idea in the first place, and I was disappointed not to see it at Double or Nothing, but better late than never. This is probably what they were waiting for. They were waiting until they got closer to Wembley Stadium and they got Britt Baker back. So I think this is a great spot for her to be in. And also, here's the other thing about this. By the way, eventually, when there is a split, she's going to be insanely over. And she may well end up being the one to take that TBS title away from Mercedes. So I love it. I think it's great. I think it's just great to finally see this woman on fucking television. I've been waiting for so long. I thought this was great, but here's the other aspect of this that is so great. I cannot imagine, as we are this close now to Wembley Stadium, and Mercedes now has somebody at her side to watch her back, I cannot imagine that this is not setting up for the return of Jamie Hayter. The only thing is, do we get it before Wembley and then she's going to be in Britt's corner, or do we get it at Wembley? I'd rather get it at Wembley. Hit that music, let her come out, get that entrance, either at the beginning of the match, after the match, if there's some kind of, beatdown or something. I would re-debut her at Wembley Stadium. Let her get that reaction. As long as I was waiting to see Camille pop up on TV, Jamie Hayter has been sorely missed. And so I'm very optimistic now that we are actually very close, finally, to getting a Jamie Hayter return based on what we saw here. So I think it's good news all around. I love everything about this. And the sooner we get Jamie Hayter back, you could do tag team matches, right? Mercedes and Camille against Jamie and Britt. You could do Camille against Jamie Hayter. What are those matches going to look like? So I can't wait. I think that's great. Now we come back from break, and the Patriarchy is backstage. Christian Cage is holding all three Trios titles. For those who don't know, the Trios titles were vacated, and there was a match on Collision last week with the Patriarchy and the Bang Bang Gang. It was Juice Robinson and the Guns, and the Patriarchy won the titles. Christian immediately took possession of all three of them as if they all belonged to him and was posing with them. So when the segment starts here, he's got all the belts. I should mention this here. Killswitch got hurt in that match on Collision last weekend. The report is he suffered a partially torn bicep in that match, but he's planning on working through it. Now, it's not as if we see him in the ring every single week. It's not like they're doing house shows, so he could probably work through it, although that's a tough injury. But here's what I want to know, and I said this on the podcast actually on Sunday. I brought this up. I want to know what the hell is going on Collision. What is going on this show on Saturdays now? We have had four injuries in the last 3 weeks. Two on the same show this past weekend. It started a few weeks ago with Riho. Riho fractured her arm. The following week, Dalton Castle gets knocked the fuck out by Roderick Strong with a leaping knee strike. And apparently he's going to need surgery, whatever the injury is. It's serious enough that he's going to need surgery and he's going to be out for the rest of the year. So best wishes to him. Then we get to Collision this past Saturday, and there was a match between Hikaru Shida, who we saw earlier on this show, and I know a favorite of many of the people in the chat, that being Sky Blue. And in the opening moments of the match, Sky Blue catches Shida on a very simple dive out to the floor and broke her ankle. So Sky Blue now is going to be gone for months with a broken ankle, and now we find out that on that same show, later on, Killswitch suffered a torn bicep. So I don't know. It's some weird thing going on with Collision over these last 3 weeks. If I saw my name up on the board and I knew I was wrestling on Saturday, I'd be a little worried going forward because this Collision show does not have a lot of good luck around it. So whatever's going on there, hopefully it stops. Because, yeah, Jinx, it might be. It might be the curse of Punk. I don't know, but hopefully that will change. So anyway, Christian said a few words, and then he left the floor to Nick Wayne. And actually, he left. He and Mother Wayne and Killswitch walked away, and the camera is just focused on Nick Wayne, who starts cutting a promo. And he says he's going to be in the Royal Rampage match. Actually, Christian said that Nick Wayne is going to be in the Royal Rampage match, which is being taped tonight. It's probably already been taped. So it'll be two rings, 20 men. The winner of the match will be guaranteed a shot at the AEW World Championship at Grand Slam in September. So Nick Wayne is going to be in that match. As he's about to cut his own promo, he spots someone standing off to the side, and he walks over to them, and that person turned out to be Kip Sabian. And he says, "Why are you always around, like when I'm around?" Said that he knows Sabian is also in the Royal Rampage match, and he's going to throw him out. And then Wayne told him, "Nobody cares that your father is dead." I mean, boy, this got amped up from like 0 to 60 in 2 seconds here. One second he's talking about the Royal Rampage. The next second he's talking about the fact that his father is dead, and he tells him to be a man and suck it up. I am not going to lie to you. It took me a good 5 seconds to even recognize that that was Kip Sabian. You know, because he's got the blonde dye job on the hair. He's got that mustache now. I didn't realize who it was right away, but I swear, if you dye his hair black and you put a pair of shades on him, he would be a dead ringer for Dr. Disrespect. And of all the people to be mistaken for right now, or to be cosplaying as, I can tell you, Dr. Disrespect is not that person. But that's who he reminded me of when I looked at him. We have Pac one-on-one with Bear Boulder, or just Boulder, whatever. He's still Bear Boulder to me. Pac tried a suplex. Boulder didn't budge. Pac floated over into a pump kick. This didn't go very long. Pac ended up getting a win with a brain buster on the big guy for the victory for him. Excalibur did mention, I should bring this up here. Excalibur did mention Pac winning a shot at the International Championship in that four-way match a few weeks ago. But then he also mentioned that MJF is obviously wrestling Will Ospreay at Wembley Stadium. And there was no further clarification on what that means for Pac as far as Wembley goes, because what we've been hearing is that Pac wants his Wembley moment. So clearly his Wembley moment does not involve him getting a shot at the international title. That is going to have to wait. Maybe he'll get his shot at All Out. But what does that mean for Wembley? You know, he's not going to be left off the card. So what do you do with Pac, right? You stick him in a match with Chris Jericho for the FTW title? I mean, he doesn't fucking need that. Do you put him in the ring with a debuting Ricochet? Maybe Pac shows up at Wembley without a match. And he says he's got an open challenge. He is determined to have his Wembley moment, and he's going to take his Wembley moment come hell or high water, no matter what. So if anybody has the guts to walk out here and take me on one-on-one right now and try to take my moment away from me, I dare you to come out and try. And maybe that's where we get the debut of Ricochet at Wembley Stadium. And we could even open the show with it. You get Pac and Ricochet in the opening match at Wembley. How's that for an idea? Not bad, huh? I'd be down for that. But we'll see, because I don't know what else you do with the guy. Honestly, I really don't. Then we got the debut of the glamour, Mariah May, who carried her Owen Hart title belt to the ring in one hand, carrying the high heel shoe that she used to bludgeon Toni Storm with on the show 2 weeks ago. And it still had some of the blood stains on it, too. I like that little touch there. She wrestled a local talent, Caitlin Alexis. Mariah absolutely, I mean, right from the bell, she absolutely wrecked this woman with a shotgun dropkick, then went to the top, hit a missile dropkick off the top, then she hit her Mayday finish, but she did not go for the pin. She elected not to cover her. Instead, she hit the Sweet Cheek Music in the corner, and then the Storm Zero, and she pinned her and won the match. When the match was over, they played Timeless Toni Storm's theme music. But there was no Timeless Toni Storm. And Mariah May smiled, but she wasn't smiling for very long. Because in the ring behind her, a woman appeared, dressed in all black, like not even a referee, but like one of the ringside doctors or trainers. Had, you know, like black shirt, black pants, black wig. Pulled off the wig to reveal the blonde hair, and it was Toni Storm. And so we got a pull-apart brawl here. These two women started going at it. They had to be pulled apart. Toni took the microphone. And she starts screaming at Mariah. She goes, "Are you prepared to die?" This is what she yelled. She goes, "Are you prepared to die? Because I am." And everybody cheered. This is going to be great. This match is going to be great. I can't wait. The story that has built to it, the angle they shot 2 weeks ago where Mariah betrayed her, that just vicious, violent attack. I love everything about this, and honestly, I cannot wait for the match. I'm very much looking forward to it. We got a video package for Blood and Guts, narrated by the one and only Dean Malenko. We got a voiceover here from the Iceman himself. And then the cage was lowered, and it was time for Blood and Guts with Team AEW, Swerve Strickland, Darby Allin, Mark Briscoe, and the Acclaimed taking on the Elite, Hangman Adam Page, Jack Perry, Kazuchika Okada, and the Young Bucks. Jack Perry was the first entrant out. Darby Allin was the first for Team AEW. Did not even get through the cage door before he got a chair thrown right at his head. And just like that, we were off to the races. They ended up fighting into the crowd before eventually they returned to the cage. Perry got Darby up and lawn darted him into a trash can that was wedged in between the ropes. Nick Jackson, and I'm going to try to get through this as succinctly as possible. Because as you would imagine, in a match like Blood and Guts, there's a lot going on. There's constant action and big spots and stuff. But Nick Jackson was the second man out for the Elite. Mark Briscoe was the second entrant out for Team AEW. Nick brought a chair to the ring and he had a case of some kind. It was like a toolbox or something. We didn't know what was inside. But when Mark Briscoe came out, no weapons. He just came down to the ring. He started to run wild. Matt Jackson was the third entrant for the Elite. Matt tossed the case to Nick, who slammed it over Briscoe's head. And then Matt DDT'd Darby onto the case, which broke. Mark Briscoe was already bleeding at this point. Now, the match is called Blood and Guts. So you know that there's going to be a lot of bleeding in this match, obviously. John Moxley very upset. I'm sure that he was not part of this. Anthony Bowens was the third entrant for Team AEW. Nick Jackson set up for a jump from one ring to the other while Matt held Briscoe, but Darby caught Nick with a cutter from the top rope. Darby used his skateboard as a weapon. Bowens then begins to stab Jack Perry in the head with a pair of scissors. And then he takes the scissors and he opens them and he jams them into his mouth. So that was different. Kazuchika Okada was the fourth entrant for the Elite. Okada brought out the Rainmaker Drive sign that we saw him use as a weapon in the Anarchy in the Arena match. The Elite had control heading into the picture-in-picture break. Max Caster was the fourth entrant for Team AEW. He brought a microphone to the ring with him. He did not rap, but he did use it as a weapon. Nick Jackson and Jack Perry, they were both bleeding from the forehead. Some more blood. Bowens got dumped onto a board covered in barbed wire. Perry placed a second barbed wire board on top of Bowens, and then Nick performed a swanton onto the board like an idiot. Okada got a handful of thumbtacks. He poured some of them into Caster's mouth, and then the Bucks hit a double super kick to Caster right in the mush. Then we heard the theme music for one Hangman Adam Page. And there was no Hangman Adam Page. Nobody came out. He would have been the fifth and final entrant for the Elite. No Hangman. Meanwhile, Bowens wrapped barbed wire around his leg, and he hit the scissor me timbers on Nick Jackson. And then it was time for the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. Quick prayer circle for Swerve. Please stay healthy in this match. That's all I was thinking. Swerve comes out on stage with Prince Nana. As they're making their way down the ramp, guess who comes up from behind? It is Hangman Page. And he hits Swerve, really in the back of the shoulder, with a steel chair. Then he takes Swerve and he begins to handcuff him to the cage. So the front part of the cage, before he could get inside, and he cuffs him to the cage in a crucifix pose. And now Hangman is just raining punches down upon Swerve Strickland. Prince Nana tries to intervene. Page shoves him down. Page rips the AEW world title off from around Swerve's waist. He tells him, you don't deserve it. It never should have been yours to begin with. And then he strikes him in the head with the belt. Meanwhile, in the ring, Matt Jackson grabs the microphone. And he asked Hangman, what the hell are you doing? He said, we had a deal. He said, we suspended you the last time. But this time we're going to fire you if you don't get inside the cage and help us. So that got Hangman's attention. And Hangman got inside the cage. At that point, Matt Jackson ordered the referee to shut the door and lock it because he's an EVP. And so with that, the match officially began, because the match could not officially begin until all 10 men had been introduced. It works the same way in War Games, right? The match beyond now begins. So only now, and I think we were about 30 minutes in at this point. This was right around the half hour mark. And at this point, the match now officially begins. So after the break, because there's another commercial break, they come back. And Jeff Jarrett is coming down to the ring, and he's got his guitar with him. So here comes Jarrett. He's walking down to the ring, but he gets stopped by Brandon Cutler, who comes running out from the back. And Brandon Cutler, he cuts him off, and he's, you know, saying something to Jarrett. Here comes Billy Gunn. And Billy Gunn comes up from behind Brandon Cutler, and he tells him to suck it, and he blasts him with the right hand. He spins around, and Jarrett smashes the guitar over Brandon Cutler's head. Jarrett and Billy Gunn then go over to Swerve, and they're trying, I think they had a key. Even Excalibur didn't know. They were fiddling around with something. I would imagine it was the key to the cuffs, but whatever it was. They're trying to unlock the cuffs, and they're having a bitch of a time doing it. But eventually they're able to get him free. Prince Nana, though, is going to have to help out here because Swerve can't get into the cage. The cage door has been locked. So Nana hands Swerve a pair of pliers. Using the pliers, he's able to peel back the bottom part of the cage. He basically rips the whole bottom part open and he climbs into the cage that way, through the bottom. Whatever works, right? Swerve finally gets inside. He takes out the Elite one by one until it's just Swerve in ring number one. And over in ring number two is Hangman Adam Page. So, the brawl begins. Swerve ended up with a staple gun, tried to use it on Hangman. Swerve, though, got hit with a low blow. Matthew opened the broken case from earlier that I mentioned that Nick brought to the ring with him. Opens the case, and inside the case, even more staple guns. One for each of them. Enough to go around. So each member of the Elite grabbed one. They took turns stapling Swerve with them. Swerve comes up laughing. He's smiling. Swerve fought back. He used his own staple gun. Okada dropkicked him, though. Took him down. So Okada went to go deliver the Rainmaker. But instead he stops and he flips off Swerve. But when he puts his middle finger up, Swerve staples his finger. And everybody laughed at that. Hangman, though, comes out of nowhere with a buckshot lariat, but accidentally takes out Okada with the buckshot. Well, maybe that's going to be Hangman's opponent, maybe, for All In. Since Hangman doesn't have an obvious match and Okada doesn't have an obvious match, maybe that's the match. Since neither man has any obvious opponent for Wembley right now. But anyway, he gets taken out with a buckshot by accident. Swerve then staples Hangman in the cheek. And then hits him with a house call kick. We go to another picture-in-picture break. And this was important because during the picture-in-picture break, Swerve and Hangman, they leave the cage through that bottom portion that he had ripped open, the hole in the cage. So now they're outside the cage, and they're fighting up the ramp onto the stage, and then they fall off the stage, and they crash through a couple of tables down below. And I couldn't believe that. That seemed like a pretty significant part of the match. And that happened in a little tiny box during picture in picture. And that was it. That was the last we saw of either man for the remainder of the match. And I just thought to myself, thank God. Thank you. Swerve looked to be okay. He looked all right. He'll get checked out in the back. Like I said, I was holding my breath the entire time thinking about Friday. But I think he made it out okay. So now we're into the overrun here. There's two tables that were set up on the outside of the ring on top of two additional tables. So there's four in total. And they're kind of stacked up. So you know that there's a big spot coming. Nick Jackson climbs the side of the cage, and he's followed by Anthony Bowens. Nicholas ended up knocking Bowens off the side of the cage, and Bowens took the plunge. He crashed down through all four tables, and they all exploded. Inside the cage, Briscoe is going around the horn here, hitting J-Drillers on everybody. J-Driller to Matt Jackson. J-Driller to Jack Perry. Another one to Matt Jackson. I think he hit one to Okada as well. Darby Allin places Jack Perry on a table in the other ring, ring number two, and then he hits him with a kendo stick. Briscoe had Matthew on a table in between the two rings. And then he hit the froggy bow. This is in between the two. And it hits the froggy bow and puts him to the table. One of the big spots of the match, maybe the biggest, in ring number two, Darby Allin is scaling the cage. He's climbing across the beams on the roof of the cage. And he scurries out because right below him, on a table down below, is a Jack Perry laid out on the table. So Darby scales the cage, he scurries over, and he drops for a coffin drop all the way down, crashes through the table. That was a pretty nutty spot, but I will tell you, that was safe by Darby Allin standards. You know, it's hard to believe that this was the first cage match that Darby has ever been in his entire career. Believe it or not, he's never been in a cage match before. So for him, when I heard that, I thought, oh shit, like, I thought for sure he was going off the top of the cage. I mean, we've seen that happen before. I thought for sure he was going to go flying. So again, by Darby Allin standards, that was actually a pretty tame spot, but it looked cool. Caster grabbed the case that the Bucks had brought out earlier, and he pulled out two pairs of handcuffs, which Briscoe used to chain Jack Perry to the cage. And Briscoe was beating on Perry with a kendo stick. He was telling him to quit. Perry refused to quit. In fact, Jack Perry spat on him. And so in return, Darby went under the ring, he was looking for something. Mark Briscoe then blasts Jack Perry in the head with a chair shot. And Jack Perry is, he's cuffed to the cage, so he can't shield himself, he can't protect himself, and he didn't hold back either, you know, unless it was like a gimmicked chair or something. He took that chair and he fucking killed him with that chair shot right in the skull. I don't need to see that anymore. You know, I really don't. A lot of these guys get their brains scrambled, we know. We used to see this all the time. It was commonplace. I don't need to see it anymore. Darby came back, and now he's got a barbecue lighter, and he's got a can of gasoline. And he goes over to Jack Perry, and he starts to pour the gasoline all over Jack Perry. Now, Jack Perry, again, he is cuffed to the cage. So he cannot defend himself. He cannot fight back. He is being doused in the gasoline. Darby gets on the microphone. And he tells Jack Perry, you're going to give me a shot at the TNT title, or I'm going to set you on fire. Matthew Jackson, he's down on the mat. And I think he might have been handcuffed to the ropes, because he's just sort of sitting there on the mat. And Matt says, you want a shot at the TNT title? You got it. Wembley Stadium all in. You got your TNT title match. And he's explaining to Darby, he's, you know, telling him, he says, look, this has just gone too far. This has to stop. And Darby says, well, quit. Because if you don't quit, I'm going to set him on fire. And he did. Just like that. Matt Jackson says, I quit. And Team AEW wins blood and guts. So it was kind of an abrupt finish. It was a bit of a flat finish. In a way, it was a flat finish, but I didn't hate the finish. I liked the finish. I could see where some people may have thought it was a little on the flat side, but this is how these matches work. You know, these matches go until somebody says, I quit. That's it. We surrender. Darby Allin was threatening to set one of their partners on fire. And the guy was cuffed to the cage and defenseless to do anything to stop it. It kind of makes sense that one of the Young Bucks would say, I quit. Now, what we got here was a violent, bloody match, as advertised, right? It's literally in the name of the match. The match is called Blood and Guts. What else would you expect from a match called Blood and Guts? It gave you that. It was a long match. I clocked it in at about 48 minutes. So think about this, right? We got an hour-long match on the show last week, and we got damn near another hour-long match this week. That doesn't happen very often on any wrestling show where you have a long fucking match like that, and you come back the following week and you do it all over again. Maybe the last time I could think of was probably that series of matches that FTR and Bullet Club Gold had on Collision last summer. Because I think they had... I want to say it was back-to-back weeks, and I think both those matches were very long matches. But again, it doesn't happen very often. But this was exactly what it needed to be. Again, it was violent, but there were stories that were playing out during the match. I liked it. The Swerve and Hangman stuff I liked. And I want to see that match. The Darby Allin match now is set up for the TNT title at All In. It made it feel like a big deal that really, if you think about it, the purpose of this match, the finish, really existed to set up that title match for Wembley Stadium, which makes it feel like a bigger deal. So I know some people don't like these matches, and they don't like maybe any of the hardcore type stuff, Anarchy in the Arena and stuff like that. Some people will like it, some people will not. I know what to expect coming in, and I didn't think that the story was all that strong, to be honest with you, coming into the show. The whole Team AEW against the Elite thing, in my opinion, has really fallen very flat. It hasn't really worked in the way that I think Tony Khan wanted it to. But they managed to still tell different stories during the match itself. All In is looking like a very strong card right now. And they've already got some matches that they could even be setting up for All Out. Swerve and Hangman could be an All Out match. Pac wrestling for the international title, that could be an All Out match. MJF and Daniel Garcia, that could be an All Out match. So these next couple of shows that they have coming up at the end of August and the beginning of September are looking very strong right now. Very strong. And we still have many more weeks left to go. But this was the Blood and Guts episode, and so I thought Blood and Guts delivered what it was supposed to. The Mariah May segment, I enjoyed that. The Jericho Suzuki thing, I didn't. I just wasn't a fan of that. The Pac thing was just to fill some time on the show. I don't have an issue with it. You know, you give Pac a little bit of TV time. It would be nice to get some more clarity on what his role is going to be or when he is going to get that title match. They didn't really specify that. But the Blood and Guts match, I thought, delivered what it was supposed to do. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll right now. What did you think of Blood and Guts? 70%, almost. 69% thumbs up for the match, for the show. 31% thumbs down for the Blood and Guts edition of Dynamite Tonight. You can cast your vote on X at Solomonster is where you guys can go. Always love hearing from you. You know that. Let's get into your super chats. As we always do, once we bowl through these reviews, take your questions here at the end, see what you guys want to ask and what you guys thought of the show tonight. Let's find out. And thank you, by the way. Look at this. David Theory dropping a $150 super chat, breaking in the brand new one. What's up, Solo? Don't know if you caught this, but I did. Yes, I did. He said, on JD's social media, he said, it's official. Solomonster is a psychic medium when he is not podcasting for the Mercedes and Camille thing. Look, I'm just happy they went through with the idea. I wouldn't have pitched it if I didn't believe that it was a great idea. I thought that it was a very smart way to debut Camille. It will get her in a prominent role on the show. It will allow them to showcase her in a dominant fashion. And it will eventually lead to a big babyface turn when the time is right. It's actually very similar to Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter and the way things worked out there. And Jamie Hayter got over naturally and organically. And before she got hurt, she was a huge babyface. She was the world champion. And I think that'll be Camille one day. It's just a very smart way, I think, to introduce her to the AEW audience. Even though she was on the show a long time ago. She had one appearance, maybe, I think it was, like 4 years ago. Like, nobody remembers that. Nobody remembers that. Owen Curtis, Solo, my family and I have a nickname for your fine ass. The God of War. You bring the heat and the streets know it. Praise be to you, my man. Well, Owen, thank you. I was not expecting that compliment, but thank you, sir. Smoking Dried Chicken says, when Mark Briscoe hit Jack Perry in the head with the chair, this dried chicken here said, that's for getting Phil Brooks fired. Jack Perry is off my shit list after tonight. Jerome Eugenio, Solomonster, correct again about the Camille debut. Now, do you think this sets up Hayter's return at Wembley? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. How could it not? It has to. We're going to be getting a Jamie Hayter return, and it's going to be great. Smoking Dry Chicken, congrats to your Mets. Sweeping my Yankees during the Subway Series. This dried chicken being a good sport. You know what? I'll take the victories where they come. Because God knows this team disappoints me all the time. So I will happily take those victories when they come. And of course, any victories over the Yankees are always that much sweeter. David, again, thank you for the 150, and let's see who else is on the list here. We got Bobby's World. Yes, indeed. We got Bobby's World, 2110. Look at that fine specimen of a guy right there. Talk about muscle. Mercedes got her muscle. Solomonster's got his. Bobby's World says, dead serious right now. I had a dream about the learning tree last night. Uh-oh. I blame all of you, but I'm not going to do anything about it because I will never unsubscribe. LOL. Love you guys. I liked how he dropped the $15 one and not the $12 one. He was adamant about not dropping a learning tree. Thank you, Bobby. Boots, As the commish, are you getting extra security geeks in case Hangman decides to show up at Hog on Friday looking for Swerve? I say, let them fight. Well, we will take extra precautions because we are on high alert. There's always the possibility that Hangman... I mean, this guy is unpredictable, right? I mean, he is willing to go the extra mile to do bad things to Swerve Strickland. So I will have my security geeks will be on alert. Just in case. David Thiering, FYI chat, YouTube gave me the middle finger and clicked me off of being subscribed even though I am a member. I don't know why or what happened. It's stupid. I'll be back to chat live soon. Well, that sucks, fucking YouTube. Yeah, it sucks because if you get unsubscribed and then you resubscribe, you're not able to chat in these live stream chats for 2 weeks. Because you got to set a limit. You have to be a subscriber for a certain number of weeks, or else you get all the bots and the porn links and everything. So you got to set some kind of a limit. But David, thank you for the super chats. We're going to be here waiting for you. You'll be back in the chat in no time. I don't know why that happened, but Oz and Glorious says, hello, Solo Branch. Are you excited for Jamie Hayter and DMD against Camille and Monet? Isn't AEW TV so much better without Disco Garcia? I think so. Thanks, guys. Yes, I am very much looking forward to that. In fact, I was just saying, you know, All Out. There's already a bunch of potential matches for All Out. Why not do that tag match at All Out? 2 weeks after Wembley. That's what I would do. Uffman Entertainment. Mets played the Yankees 4 times. Mets beat the Yankees 4 times. Let's go, Mets. Fuck the Yankees. I may only be able to say that this week, so I'm going to take full advantage of that. Fuck the Yankees. Food Hive. I just stopped by to see if if Solomonster broke his arm, patting himself on the back with his correct prediction with Mercedes' new muscle. No, the arm's feeling pretty good. I don't got that like Barry Horowitz like imprint, so I know where to go like that. No, it's all good. Don't forget, by the way, who told you that Seth Rollins was going to be the guest referee at SummerSlam? I'm just saying. Jonathan Bordeaux, international title. What a pittance. It'll be back. It's not gone permanently. Arby, under a learning tree, I prayed to Grimace for the Mets to sweep the Yankees, and it happened. In the name of Solomonster, the learning tree, and the Grimace, can I get an OMG? Thanks, guys. Get an OMG for me. All good for me. Project Libertad, Tanahashi, saw that title that MJF showed and got a huge hard-on and wished he could have something like that in New Japan. Well, he's the president, so if he wants one, I mean, he can create one. He can create whatever he wants. He's the president of the friggin' company. The Juliet, 316, thoughts on the latest with the NBA, Amazon, Warner Brothers Discovery drama, and how it affects AEW. I've talked a lot about this. I did see the news today. The NBA decided against taking the matching offer from Warner Brothers Discovery, which finally puts the final stamp on this. For now, I did tell you guys this may end up in court, so it may not be over yet, but the NBA said, yeah, we're not interested. We're going with Amazon. So as of this moment, that means there will no longer, after 2025, there will no longer be any NBA on TNT or TBS. And I think that if it has any effect whatsoever on AEW, it would have a positive effect. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to affect the deal that they get one way or the other. I just don't think that it would have a negative effect. If anything, I think it would be a positive effect, not a negative effect. I'll talk more about that, though, on Sunday. M. Mills, thank you for the $25 super chat. Very much appreciated. Red Panda, Big Lil Sips Records with a $6 super chat. Beetlejuice is using Jeff Jarrett's slap nuts as punching bags. You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I meant to bring that up. How many of you have seen the new trailer for the Beetlejuice sequel coming out in September? I believe September 6th is the date. I think that's actually the day before All Out. And the day after the House of Glory show in Chicago, right? Sandwiched in the middle is the new Beetlejuice movie coming out. I'm going to be seeing it. I will be there. I will be seated. Beetlejuice is one of those movies. Beetlejuice and the Goonies. Those two movies. Those are the ones I remember the most growing up as a kid, wearing out those VHS tapes, watching those movies over and over and over again. Those are like the two main ones. Superman Bassfisher. The learning tree needs some medical attention after those chops. He was trying to chop him down. The Juliet MVP just posted what seems to be a WWE goodbye letter on Instagram. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty apparent he and Lashley are as good as gone. Smoking Dry Chicken with the 12 says, Billy the Puppet from Saw has offered you three options. Option number one, fight every member of the bloodline for $1 million. Option number two, fall through 20 light tubes for $500,000. Number three, 100 chops for $5,000 from Gunther and Suzuki. I'll fight every member of the bloodline for $1 million. I'll do that. Yeah. The only one I'm really afraid of is Jacob Fatu. I've been around him. He's a scary dude. But I think I could outrun him. I think I could probably use my speed and tire him out. But you flash $1 million in my face and I'll take my chances. You can keep the light tubes. Amanda Nicole, just showing some support to one of my favorites in the IWC. What is this one of stuff? Amanda, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Derek J. Speaks says, man, I love Danielson so much, but they did such a great job of hyping up a Swerve Hangman match tonight. I wish we were getting that at Wembley. I'm with you, man. I wish we were too. We're going to get it. It's just going to have to take a little bit longer. Ricky Cornflakes, where is Hologram? How can AEW come back without the GOAT? Thank you, TV Tracks. Hologram. Tell you what, though, you know, if you're going to debut a new character like that, you're not going to find a better opponent for him than Gringo Loco. We've got Gringo in House of Glory, and, he'll be there Friday, but Gringo's great. You put him in the ring with anybody, you're going to get a great match. But the hologram gimmick, that's all it is. It's just, it's a gimmick. There's a little bit of a novelty to it. And he'll spend most of his time on Rampage before long. It's all, you know, just, it's nice to hype up somebody new and give him a push. Nothing wrong with that, but there's nothing special about it. It's not going to be some big money-making gimmick for AEW. It's just not. But good on them for trying, right? You want to give somebody some shine there in their debut. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but yeah, that gimmick is not going to make them any money. I did mention the Hog Show. I just want to mention it again here. I will not be live on Friday night because this is where I will be. We have House of Glory, High Intensity. The NYC Arena, 7 Eastern. You can stream it on Triller TV Plus. Hey, look who it is. It's the AEW World Champion, Swerve Strickland. Coming back. This time to take on the Amazing Red. We got Zilla Fatu on the show, representing the Bloodline. We've got Mike Santana defending his AEW World title. We've got the debut. You know what? I'm very excited about this. I've outdone myself this time. Wanted to bring in the best. And so for the first time ever, coming into House of Glory on Friday, and she will be challenging for the HOG Women's World title, The debut of Megan Bain. Coming a hog. If you've not heard that name before, you will soon. Can't wait. Thank you for all the likes. We are currently sitting, from what I can see here, well over 400. So thank you for getting us over the hump. Let's see if we can hit 500. But right now, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Speaking of bookers, there's one right there, Mr. Tony Khan. This will be the final Be the Booker of the week. So let's make it a good one, shall we? Let's make it a good one. Let's see what we can whip up here, shall we? Tag team Be the Booker. Oh, you didn't know. It's the New Age Outlaws. It's the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. You know, it's weird. Billy Gunn, like in this image here, this was probably 2012, I'm going to guess. Billy Gunn is in better shape now in AEW than he was in this photo. And this photo has to be over 10 years old. He's in better shape now than he was then. It's not the way it's supposed to work. So we got the Outlaws. I want to say 7-time tag team champions in WWE. Could have been 6. I think it was 7, though. Maze makes a good point. In that photo, they're actually the middle-aged Outlaws. Yeah, well, that's like Shawn Michaels. Like, you're not going to call him the Heartbreak Kid, right? What do you call him? If you don't call him the Heartbreak Kid, what else do we call him now? He just turned 59 years old the other day. The kid is not a kid anymore. The Outlaw is going to be taking on War Machine from Ring of Honor. None of this Viking Raiders garbage. It will always be War Machine. And I like that match. War Machine and the New Age Outlaws would have been a good match. Although we know who would have won the promo battles between those two teams. Women's Be the Booker, we begin with Jazz, the former WWE Divas Champion. Wonder what she's up to these days. Her and Rodney Mack. All right, let's see who we book Jazz against here. Jazz is going to take on the reigning WWE Women's Champion, Bayley. Jazz and Bayley. It's like the battle between two completely different eras of the women's division in WWE. Past and present. Now let's book ourselves a really great main event. I want a really great main event. That's what I want. This is our last match of the week. Let's go for the gold here. And we begin with the former World Wrestling Federation champion, the Ultimate Warrior. Or as he would say it, the Ultimate Warrior. How many little warriors did we have in here when you were little kids, huh? Don't be ashamed to admit it. I had the Warrior Wrestling Buddy. Ultimate Warrior. One-on-one with. Oh my god. Kazuchika Okada. You know, if anybody is going to bring the Ultimate Warrior to the best match that he will ever have, it is this man right here. What the hell? I mean, just imagine, just visualize this for a second. Close your eyes and picture. What would that match even look like? Okada and the Ultimate Warrior. What dimension would that match be taking place in? Hurricane says it's Warrior, so it'll be 10 minutes max. Well, yeah, I tell you right now, you're not going to get one of these 45-minute Okada matches.
Ah!
Yeah, you're not going to be getting that. That I can promise you. All right, final super chat check here. We are going to go to Alex. Brother Solo, with the current generation producing some of the best female talent in all of pro wrestling, are there any female talent from the dreadful WWE Divas era that you think would fit well in today's era? Yeah, I do. I think that, I think Michelle McCool and Layla had kind of a good act going, and I think that could have worked in this current era. Trish Stratus and Lita, that, you know, they would have fit in like a glove. Today, Victoria would have fit in very well. Molly Holly would have fit in very well. Who's the other one? Eve Torres. Eve Torres was good. Eve Torres is a beautiful woman. But she was good also, and I think she would have fit in well too. So there are plenty of women who I think would have thrived and would have done well working with the women today. Absolutely. Smoking dry chicken, I'll admit, I had a crush on Winona Ryder after watching Beetlejuice for the first time as a young dried chicken. Well, as long as you didn't have a crush on Beetlejuice, because that would be fucking weird. Chris Manson, I'm going to miss Timeless Tony Storm. Also, do you think this feud ends at Wembley? Seems too good to be a one-off. No, I don't think it ends there. Now, whether they turn it back around 2 weeks later at All Out, if they run it back maybe a Grand Slam on Dynamite at the end of September, got Wrestle Dream coming up in October. You have your pick. I don't think you need to rush right back with it at All Out. I think you can probably hold off until Wrestle Dream, maybe do a rematch on that show. Smoking dry chicken, we need more Instagram Natalia on my TV screen. Okay. Juan Ocampo, heard that you're coming to Chicago. Well, I will definitely be attending my first indie show now. Hope you don't know hotshot your fans like MJF and hope to say hi. I think you went a little haywire there in that last sentence. But yes, if you're going to go to the Hog Show, Logan Square Auditorium, Thursday, September 5th, two nights before All Out. Tickets are on sale now. Don't wait. I will be there. So if you see me, you get to say hello. Don't be sneaking up on me and going, I am the learning tree. Because I might turn around and smack you. I can't guarantee you I won't. The Winston Slip. We'll miss you on Friday, Solo. Thanks for the review. You're very welcome. I will be back next week. It'll all be back to normal next week. Marquand 1976. Marquand says, Okada would call Warrior the ultimate bitch. Yes, he would. And the Warrior would proceed to gorilla press him over his head and drop him and probably injure him, and he'd probably break his fucking shoulder. And then he'd be gone for a year. Joey Jojo Jr. with the $3. It's important to me that you know my idea about Dom and Vicky Guerrero last night was a joke. You and JD seem mad. No, we weren't mad. It's just we have no interest in seeing Vicky Guerrero back on TV. And honestly, the way that whole situation played out on social media with her and her daughter and, it was just really bad look for Vicky. And I just have no interest in seeing her back on my TV. Boney, compared to AEW and WCW, what was the TNA versus WWE tribalism like? Nothing like it is today. There's always going to be some degree of it, but it's as bad now as it has ever been. Had social media been around during the Monday Night War, it would have been even worse. But it's as bad now as ever. Said. How am I going to pronounce this? Yuo Spingucci. Jericho must have naked Tony Khan pics. What the fuck? Well, what would you rather see? Naked Tony Khan pics or naked Jericho pics? How's that for a parting image before you go to bed tonight? Smoking dried chicken, Shawn Michaels down at NXT is cooking as Booker. Eminem, thank you for the super chat. And Smoking Dried Chicken says, watch out for Carmen Petrovic in 2025. I haven't had the chance to see too much of her in NXT. Seemed very little. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of breakout talent down there, especially in the women's division. So I am looking forward to seeing how many of them become the next Tiffany Stratton or the next Bianca Belair, because they've produced some very talented ladies that I think they're going to make a lot of money with in the years to come. So I look forward to that. What if Twitter was around in 1998? You know what? Wrestling would not have been nearly as fun if it was around in 98. I'm glad it wasn't around. I feel bad for like a lot of the younger fans who are growing up now, and it's all social media, you know, wrestlers out of character on social media. It's just not the same, you know. I'm actually grateful I grew up as a wrestling fan without social media. You know, I can enjoy it now in some ways for what it is, but I'm glad I didn't have it when I was a younger fan. I just feel like it would have made me a lot more cynical and jaded about a lot of different things, but also I just think it would have just revealed too much. You know, because you can reveal too much, and it takes away, I think, from the enjoyment of it. But in any event, thank you guys for tuning in. This is your final review of the week, Blood and Guts. Thank you for all the super chats. David, you are still with us. I don't know. Thank you for the $150 bomb. I appreciate that very much. And one last call here from Alex Marvez. There you go. All right, Alex. Calm down, brother. Be well. Stay safe. I'll see you guys on Sunday, episode 872 of The Sound Off. And don't forget, go back and check out TNT with myself and JD on his channel from last night. So I'll see you guys on Sunday for 872. Until then, take care, guys.